Aren't you going to tell us? She isn't telling us how many tickets she's given out.
14 feet from the building.
Where's the three principals?
I have no idea.
Your credit card and purchasing. I'm sorry, are you purchasing enough things now?
And it's about 5:10. We have a couple of didgeridoo players who have joined the group. Some new chalking has appeared. Don't clothe yourself in bigotry at the Pacific Trading Company. And save the planter has appeared next to the planter. And then next to the table, some questionable individual has chalked, Butch Baker has a nice ass. For heaven's sake.
Why are you such a hateful person, Robert?
I'm not hateful.
Now, what you're hearing now is a dialogue between myself and the owner of the Pacific Trading Company. You heard her just say, why are you such a hateful person, Robert? And I tried to have a dialogue with her on this issue, but she eventually, well, here she is, in her own words, speaking.
You?
Why are you such a hateful person and saying lies about me?
Okay, what have I lied about? I see silence. What have I lied about?
Well, I haven't been listening on purpose to everything you've been saying.
One lie. Just one lie.
Well, I guess I should start tape recording what you're saying, and then I'll be able to be
specific.
You
can't remember any lie that I've made. You're calling me a liar, but you don't remember any lies that I've made. One lie. That's all I'm asking. I am, and I'll play it without any kind of censoring.
I don't want to get involved with you.
You don't want to get involved, but you are involved in driving all these people away. That's what you're doing. You're involved making sure that this planter is gone. And these hosts here are part of this whole process. Can I help you?
No, I'm just reading your literature.
Oh, would you have a piece of literature? Why don't you read it?
Thanks.
Yeah.
Are they all the same?
No, they're different.
Okay. See if you can find any lies anywhere.
Yeah, I've been accused of being a liar. But the owner here has got any answers. This woman wants to remove this seating area. This is the owner of the Pacific Trading Company. And she's not telling us why. Tell us why.
Yeah.
She's silent, notice? But she has her friends, the hosts, helping her. These are the people who give tickets. These are the people who harass. They'll be harassing you when you have no place to sit because she has removed your seating area. Is that a lie? Tell me that's a lie. She hasn't said it's a lie. Notice? Not a word. And that's because it's not a lie. It's the truth. She walks back into her store. She's unwilling to confront the public. She simply wants to remove the public from this area. She's already called the police in order to remove a table. She wants to remove the public by using police and wannabe police like these hosts here to harass. Yeah, that's true. Boycott the Pacific Trading Company. Boycott stores that support bigotry. We need more open spaces downtown. We need more places for people to sit. We need more open process at city council. We need open dialogue. No, we have a private merchant in collusion with the police.
I'm not going to take my flyer.
Yeah, I grabbed two. I don't want to wait.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
A private business in collusion with the police and the redevelopment agency is changing the face of your town. That's what's going on here. They're making it hostile to poor people, hostile to homeless people, hostile to young people. That's what the Pacific Trading Company, Costa Brava and the Irish Pub as well, and Jackson's Shoes are doing down here. In secret meetings, behind closed doors, that's what's going on. And when we talk to you about it, in 10 minutes you'll see a police officer show up here to remove this table. That's what's going to happen in Santa Cruz, the city that provides civil rights for the merchants, but not for the rest of us.
You see their little sign in the window?
What does it say?
It says that they're being unfairly targeted by activists for being anti-homeless.
Apparently there's a sign in the window that says that they're being unfairly targeted by activists.
Let me read this letter here. It says, Pacific Trading Company, we are committed to a safer, comfortable, user-friendly downtown. We inform the city of the incidents which take place in front of our store which are illegal or create an environment of hostility or harassment to the public. The city council recently passed ordinances with the intention of improving the atmosphere of the downtown Santa Cruz. We request the police and the host to enforce these ordinances. Because of our proactive manner in dealing with downtown issues, we are being targeted by political activists and falsely accused of being anti-homeless. We will not be intimidated by the threats of these people to harm our business by misrepresenting our intentions. Thank you. Please place drinks and food at the counter while shopping. Okay. They.
I know they do it all the time.
They must be fond of.
2 minutes ago, like they just came by, kind of did the old cop swagger, came up, gave the eyeball, like you're supposed to get scared and leave.
I hear you.
Swagger away.
Swagger on, yes.
Pacific Trading Company is the subject of today's discussion. Thank you for coming.
Our pleasure.
All right.
Thank
all right.
You.
Thank you. Didgeridoo players are leaving.
It's the subject of today's discussion because it is this business that has been surveilling the mall and intends to remove seating area for 30 people. But I'm sure Andy Schifrin, who works with Marty Wormhout, the supervisor, that's the man in the blue cap, will take some action on this issue because I know he favors. Andy, don't go away. Come on back. Looks like he's not coming back.
What?
They're going to move this out so that you won't be able to sit here.
Oh, that would cost it up fucking very.
That would be a $162 fine. Thanks to Candy Jackson and Jackson's Shoes. A whole series of anti-homeless laws, not unlike the Patriot Act at a national level, has pervaded the city of Santa Cruz for the benefit of the merchants on Pacific Avenue who somehow think they own the town. They think they own your civil liberties, they're going to remove your seating spaces, and they're going to use your money to do it. $7,200 of taxpayer money to remove 30 seating spaces because the Pacific Trading Company doesn't like the people out here. The owner of the Pacific Trading Company is right in there, and she has said, I'm not telling the truth. Well, I suggest you walk into her store and ask her just exactly what the truth is and what lies am I spreading out here. Her name is, I think it's Carolyn. I'm not sure what her name is, actually. I wish I did. So if I'm a liar, why doesn't the owner of this store have the courage to come out here and tell me what my lies are?
Interesting, though, that she asked, you know, she accused you of lying but couldn't think of a single lie.
She said that she had to get a tape recorder. Well, we can lend her our tape recorder.
She can take a copy when you air it.
You're a lawyer. You can bet on it.
You know, Robert, the sign that says that the downtown ordinances were passed to enhance the atmosphere downtown, how is the atmosphere downtown being enhanced by making it illegal to blow bubbles, or illegal to hacky sack, or illegal to sit on a sidewalk 14 feet from a building, or illegal to ask for food with a sign after dark? How does that enhance the downtown? I can't think of a single enhancement that happened with those ordinances. They made previously innocent behavior into criminal behavior, and those laws are enforced almost exclusively against poor and homeless people, people of color, and young people. Selectively enforced, which, by the way, is against the law, because the laws are supposed to be equally enforced against all people. How does that enhance the downtown? I think it just makes it more of a repressive, shall I use the
we
F
have,
word here?
I've seen, actually, a man has gone into the store to talk to the owner and may have some words for us. Did the owner have any specific concerns she had? She wanted.
No. I just talked to her. But you know, we can work something out, can't we?
Well, they're planning to move this fence in the next 4 days. I had hoped we could, but she didn't go to the public. She went behind their back. See, that's the problem. It's not. It hasn't even gone to a city council meeting. So I wish we could work something out.
Yeah, I know. Because, you know, I do want these engagements all. People get back to work, the zeal of labor, yeah. The joy of labor, and be part of society. It's about responsibility. Yeah. It's not just about power, or you do this, and right. You do that, I pay taxes. But it's about us pulling in together. We're going to have some differences.
Yeah.
Of course you have differences. Ideology, you know, like leftists.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter, left or right, but still, the ideas. What I'm saying is that, you know, we should unite, self-divide. Oh, well, he did this and do that. We should unite.
If we can, I certainly agree with you. The problem we have is that if businesses make decisions that affect all of us and we have no input and they're going to destroy public seating areas, what can we do? I mean, you know, except say don't buy from those businesses. Don't patronize people who are doing so for bigoted reasons. You work in Togo's yourself.
Yeah, but the thing is that
what's your name, by the way?
Ken Nguyen. If the Dove House said, what we want to do is that we need kind of like an economic clout. I mean, we need to get back to work. And that we can contribute something.
Oh, I agree. I mean, unemployment is miserable, and there's what 16%. But you know, how is it going to help people who are poor and unemployed and have no place to sit, to have all this place removed, so that the Pacific Trading Company can do what it wants, because it wants to attract yuppies and upper middle class people who can still afford this clothing, but it doesn't want people to use the public sidewalk. See, that's the problem.
But
for sitting anymore.
Yeah, but then again, this more. Motivate them to be better. See, all right.
I'm not sure how to do that. See, that's the problem. And it's been pointed out to me that there are, at about 5:30, a couple of police officers standing near Borders. Now, whether they're surveilling the Borders group or waiting to pounce on us, it's not clear. But we have too many police on Pacific Avenue. That's what I think. Why is she doing this? Because that's what's happening downtown. She's using these gentlemen here to help her. Police officers in Santa Cruz. Can I help you, gentlemen?
We spoke about an hour ago, and you're now in violation, so I guess I have to pack up and...
I've been told by the police this table has to move. Santa Cruz Police Department declares, on behalf of the Pacific Trading Company, this table cannot be here. This table is illegal. Santa Cruz, the city where you have to move your table or get taken by the police to jail. 2003, Santa Cruz. It's not Bush. It's not Ashcroft. It's Mayor Riley, Santa Cruz Police, and the Pacific Trading Company. Being told, if I don't move this table, I will be going to jail. That's what I'm being told. Luckily, I think another table may take my place.
Robert, he likes it because he gets to go at least take a shower and then he's out in 2 hours, huh?
Not necessarily. This is the weekend.
Usually, anyway.
This is the weekend.
Usually, oh yeah, it is. No, they'll get you out faster, you know why?
They might.
Because they want to get the drunks and they're not the real kind.
So I need to ask officer, who is filing the charge here? You or the Pacific Trading Company?
I'm not filing any charges.
No. Who's making the arrest? Who will be writing the citation?
If you don't move?
I'm sorry?
Depends if they want to sign a citation or not.
Oh, okay. Well, I will wait for them to sign a citation if that's what they want, because I believe we have a right to be here. No, that's what I'm wondering. Well, that depends. What I'm asking you, are you intending to cite or are they?
I'm not intending to do anything personally.
Oh, okay. Well, I appreciate that, Officer Hanson. I appreciate your warning me as well.
I'm merely here to make sure that this goes smoothly.
Indeed. I'm reassured. The officer tells me he's only here to make sure that the civil rights, one's First Amendment rights, are simply removed smoothly. He wants to make sure it all goes well, that we take this table and move it and get it out of here, because apparently organizing a boycott against the Pacific Trading Company
is a crime in this town. And the First Amendment does not apply in this town any further. If the merchants say go, you gotta go.
Now that was a good one.
They took his tape recorder too, but they gave it back to him.
This is the town where four police officers walked down the mall, up and down the mall, giving people tickets. And people hide. And they hide because they don't want $162 tickets. That's why they hide. There's no question about it. It's a good racket. It helps people, helps the merchants get people to do what they want them to do. But it's wrong. It's wrong to surrender your civil rights because police officers tell you you have to. That is wrong. That's the kind of thing supposedly that the U.S. was fighting against in Iraq. Ha, ha, ha. So apparently there's freedom for Iraqis, but not for Santa Cruzans. Thank you, Pacific Trading Company. Police officers have informed me that if I don't move this table away from the store that this table is addressing, from the planter, which is the issue that this table is discussing, that I will be given a $162 ticket. They're not saying whether it's going to be given by the Pacific Trading Company or given by the police. But the police have said the First Amendment does not apply in Santa Cruz to tables. Not Mark. So it is about 15 to 6, and two police officers are approaching. What's happening?
Did you understand that you were in violation? You understand that part? You're in violation, so it's time for you to move on.
You're telling me that now?
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make it clear to you, just in case I wasn't.
It's on tape. You've said it.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. That was Officer 197 telling me that I'm in violation.
Shit, they see me coming, they run away. What was that, Robert?
Police officers say this table is in violation. I say harassment by the police is in violation of the First Amendment of the Constitution. What do you say?
I put another half hour coin in your box.
Thank you.
They just gave me the same warning again.
So we're talking with
Entheos.
And you've noticed some signs downtown, right?
Well, there's down by the women's homeless shelter, they have those signs saying that they're in a few days they're gonna post it for no overnight parking between 1 and 5.
Huh, and you've seen this on three streets?
The sign says that it's for three streets.
And what are the three streets?
Center, front, and I forgot the other one.
Center, front, and perhaps Cedar?
Cedar? It might have been Cedar.
Cedar is between Center and Pacific Avenue.
Probably is that one then.
Right. Thank you for the information. Yeah, that's been done by the Public Works Department, which is trying to implement a whole permit parking process, which is going to criminalize not just homeless people sleeping in their vehicles, but anybody, particularly homeless people, parking their vehicles at night.
Yeah, they've done that up at the Harvey West neighborhood up there. That whole neighborhood's closed off for overnight parking now. It's only available now at the 12-hour parking over on the west side. That's what it's going to be like as soon as they close off that. That's going to be the only available place for people.
Thank you. You just signed a petition about to the city council asking to restore, retain, and expand public seating space. What's your thought?
I don't understand why they're doing this again. If we are already voiced our opinion saying that we still want it to be down here and we still want the performance to be down here and all the people to be down here, I don't understand why they're redoing it.
We don't care what you say. What is your name?
My name's Eva Holt.
And who is this?
Oh, I don't want to be excited. I'm sorry.
Thank you both for signing.
Good luck.
Sergeant Flippo has arrived with his escort here.
I'm up for police. We need more federal police. We need more cops. We need to...
And you heard it here first, folks.
I'm getting a little tired here. I think I will take my display device and take a breather for a while. You can borrow my tape. You can borrow some of my flyers if you'd like to.
You're too peaceable for me. Why don't you do something terrible?
What?
You're too peaceable for me. Do something terrible.
And what you hear happening now is someone else, Becky Johnson, in fact, is setting up a table in the identical position, a different display device, using a loophole in the law that allows her to set up a table, provided she wasn't the organizer of the first table. And on the table is much of this similar literature, or the same literature. I think the signs are different. It's all the same issue. But this has to be done every hour, and it's quite a trial.
Mine.
All right. Johnson?
You checking the time here?
I'll notify you that your time has officially begun. Synchronize our watches or anything like that?
He is telling Becky Johnson that she only has an hour now for her table.
We have a sergeant who will allow a political table on the mall only for 1 hour. After that, this woman gets arrested. That's the new law in Santa Cruz.
And we have a phone call live. Hi, caller.
Hey, Robert. Hey, I just had an idea. Why don't you just put your political tables on wheels, and then we can move them every 5 minutes.
You know, that might not be a bad idea, though. The law says that once you're given your warning, you can't come back for 24 hours. But I think that you may be able to do that. If you simply, if you only stay for 5 minutes at one place and then move along and keep doing a move along constantly, or, relatively constantly, you will never have been in any place for an hour, and therefore they will have no option to tell you to move along. Of course, for many people that's a real pain in the ass, but, it could be done. We could also have hovercraft hovering over Pacific Avenue. That might be an idea.
And does the law say exactly how far you have to move? I mean, why don't you just move your table, 6 inches?
Actually, I want to read you the law.
I mean, I just think this is BS. It's just...
It's a clear violation of the Constitution. The law, for those who are interested, you can go on the web and check the law. You go to Santa Cruz Municipal Codes, look under, use a Google search engine, you'll find it. It is actually what's called the non-commercial use of city streets and sidewalks for sales and solicitation, 5.43 chapter. And it's 5.43.0202. And it reads, no person shall allow a display device to remain in the same location on the sidewalk for a period of time exceeding 1 hour. After 1 hour, the person who placed the display device on the sidewalk shall not place a display device on the sidewalk within 100 feet of the original display device location. After 1 hour, the person who placed the display device shall not place a display device in the original display device location or within 100 feet of the original display device location for 24 hours. No person shall be cited under this section unless she or he has first been notified by a public officer or downtown host, interesting it says public officer, not a police officer, that he or she is in violation of the prohibition in this section and thereafter continues the violation. So in theory, if you move your table after 59 minutes to another spot, even less than 100 feet away, you are not in violation of the ordinance since your display device is not in the same spot. I haven't tried that yet, and indeed my impulse was simply to not move the display device, take a ticket, continue tabling there, come back for the second ticket and be taken to jail because it is such a flagrant violation and so outrageous that it needs to be addressed in a pretty straightforward way. The trouble was, of course, it's Friday. I have a show on Sunday. I have things I want to do, but, eventually it's probably going to come down to that and probably sooner than I think.
Okay. Well.
I like your suggestions, though.
What's that?
I like your suggestions.
Yeah, I think it's just it should become like musical tables with civil rights downtown.
Well, what we did do, I don't know if you heard it clearly on the tape, is I, after about an hour, somewhat more than an hour, after the warnings, after, they were actually wanting me to leave. They don't want to give me a ticket. They know it's going to be a major hassle for them. I finally took down my display device when Becky Johnson brought her table and put up similar signs in literature. So somebody else can do that. But the idea that you have to start, you know, engaging in these kinds of, as you put it, musical tables or whatever it is, merry-go-round tables or replaceable tables is obviously an unnecessary intrusion on a citizen's right to engage in basic First Amendment activities. And if there's some problem, you know, if somebody's blocking the sidewalk or harassing a person or, you know, something real, there are code sections to deal with that, and you can bet your butt that the merchants would use them if those things were happening. But, of course, they're not, and all the merchants want to do is extend their illegitimate grasp further and further.
So what about petitioners?
Petitioners who, it depends, this has to do with display devices. You may notice the words are display device. You can walk around, for example, with a clipboard all you want, although I heard that Greenpeace people with clipboards got harassed 5 times in the space of an afternoon by the same CSO officer, Officer Bechtel, who apparently is also big at harassing people with skateboards, and who actually goes out of her way to try to maneuver harassments, because it seems to me people like her in this situation are getting corrupted by power. That is to say, they are somehow reaching the point where they want to be able to exercise power in inappropriate situations and are doing so against innocent people. That's always the problem with police departments worldwide, of course.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when they pass these laws against sleeping and against sitting and, you know, things that are not crimes that, you know, they're... So they wind up having to, you know, go up to people who are just sitting on a curb or sitting on a planter to tell them that they're in violation of the law, when no, you know, rational thinking human would ever think that's a crime. You know, it's just
right,
insane.
And more than that, they're not obliged to do that at all. In fact, they don't. They will pick and choose the people that they choose to warn based upon their own personal priorities or upon merchant pressures. So, or alternately, they can start doing it more broadly, where they will do it to people more universally as a form of flexing their muscles. And then you have the situation like with Officer Bechtel, the CSO, who is, I don't know if you know who I'm talking about. She is a relatively chunky, a short woman who is dressed in light blue downtown. You can often find her harassing folks.
It's really ironic, too, about her name being Bechtel.
It is, although I think it's not spelled like the company.
Yeah, but still, a strange synchronicity of Bechtel abusing our rights on an international level and another Bechtel on a local level.
Yeah, I hear you. I sounds like I'm talking to that criminal chalk master, the rotten and stinking Peter Rinker.
Yes, hopscotcher on the run.
You, sir, are a real discredit to your who knows what. I hear that I've actually heard that Becky Johnson is taking this issue. You and Becky were, of course, ticketed and then convicted for chalking peace and justice slogans on the sidewalk in erasable chalk, half a block away from a store that sells erasable sidewalk chalk, Palisade Stationery. You then were, what, you were fined and did a number of hours of community service. Some of that's still on appeal. But you also have been told you have to pay a cleanup charge. And Johnson is taking this to court, claiming that what she wrote was so minuscule that to charge her, I guess they're trying to charge the two of you $100. Is that right?
Yeah.
It's just completely inappropriate.
Yeah, it is. It's... that's the price of hopscotch in this town, $162 plus $100 cleanup.
It's also the cost of peace activism, because when I allegedly chalked on the street, that's Pacific Avenue, not on the sidewalk, no war or stop the war or something like that, the police officers, 5 or 6 of them, came up to me, surrounded me, and gave me a citation for... This is on the snitch complaint of host Gina, the older host, for defacing the sidewalk. Not the street, mind you, but the sidewalk. And the reason they did that is there's no code section for defacing the street. You've got to charge somebody with vandalism. And I'd like to watch a jury try to convict me of vandalism for writing no war on erasable chalk on the street, which can be essentially washed away in 25 seconds. So what they're doing is they're using false charges, and that's really the key here. All this stuff isn't about crazy or stupid laws. It's about police abuse being supported by city council and by the merchants. It's about the police being used as a private fascisti force on behalf of creating a particular new downtown, and that's what we have to fight.
Yeah, the tabling thing is particularly scary, because, I mean, that just goes against everyone. You know, anyone who's got a table out there with a can with donations, that's like they think it's soliciting, you know, and it's just crazy.
Yeah, what's even scarier is that I don't see Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. I don't see student groups. I don't see elderly groups. I don't see veterans groups coming together and standing up on this issue. That means they pick us off one by one like they did in Germany, you know, that like Reverend Niemöller put it, you know, first they came for the, you know, the socialists, then they came for the communists, and they came
right.
for the socialists, and so forth, and when they came for me, there was nobody left. So it's really important to stand up and say no, and it may take a couple of us being martyred, so to speak, although we're not talking about being shot or beaten up, hopefully we're talking about spending a little while in jail to deal with this issue, and, you know, it's just got to be dealt with, and perhaps next week, early next week, it will be dealt with. And for those who want to deal with it, I would encourage people to give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. HUFF has weekly meetings at the Baker Square Restaurant, 1107 Ocean, on Wednesday mornings at 8:30. We're going to be talking about it there, but we may be going for some continuous tabling in violation of the move-along law that you heard me read earlier, as early as Monday or Tuesday. So, anything else you want to add?
No, that's about it. It's, you know, keep up the good work and all that.
Hey, thank you. You keep up the good artwork, and I'd like to see some sidewalk portraiture, if you don't mind.
Oh, yeah?
So maybe a chalking of Emily Riley,
As an artist, I prefer to beautify the sidewalk, and I just don't know how I could.
That's true. That would be defacing the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's not a cheap shot, folks. I think Emily has got a nice-looking face, but what she's doing is far from nice. Thanks for calling, caller.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Sergeant, I'm a draftee and I've just arrived in camp. I've come to wear the uniform and join the martial tramp. And I want to do my duty, but one thing I do implore. You must give me lessons, Sergeant, for I've never killed before. To do my job obediently is my only desire. To learn my weapon thoroughly and how to aim and fire. To learn to kill the enemy and then to slaughter more. I'll need instruction, Sergeant, for I've never killed before. Now there are rumors in the camp about our enemy. They say that when you see him, he looks just like you and me. But you deny it, Sergeant, and you are a man of war. So you must give me lessons, for I've never killed before. Now there are several lessons that I haven't mastered yet. I haven't got the hang of how to use the bayonet. If he doesn't die at once, am I to stick him with it more? Oh, I hope you will be patient, for I've never killed before. And the hand grenade is something that I just don't understand. You've got to throw it quickly or you're apt to lose your hand. Does it blow a man to pieces with its wicked muffled roar? I've got so much to learn because I've never killed before. Well, I want to thank you, Sergeant, for the help you've been to me. You've taught me how to kill and how to hate the enemy. And I know that I'll be ready when they march me off to war. And I know that it won't matter that I've never killed before. I know that it won't matter that I've never killed before.
Yeah. And I just got a call from one activist who suggests that people consider the definition of person as a corporation rather than an individual as a possible court defense. And we'll talk about that at some point. Right now, however, I've got to call attorney Kate Wells, who is challenging the city's support of torture. Yes, you heard me right. City Attorney John Barisoni is supporting police use of torture in the following situation. I've talked about this already. In the case of Chavez versus Martinez, that's a Supreme Court case where Clarence Thomas, our Supreme Court justice, sorry to say, has found in a 5-4 ruling that it's okay to torture folks provided you don't use their testimony in court. You can't effectively sue the police for violation of basic civil rights there. That was in the case of the man who was shot numerous times where the police officer went with him to the hospital, grilling him all the time, went all the way into the hospital, and then eventually no charges were leveled against the man. The man sued the police department, though I think he's permanently paralyzed. He's trying to get some kind of recovery. They're finding he can't because the police department is immune because the evidence was not used in court, and therefore it's okay for the cops to torture. City Attorney John Barisoni, who's the city attorney of both Capitola and Santa Cruz, turned in an amicus brief in favor of this issue. And Kate Wells, a local civil rights attorney, was sufficiently angry about this whole situation that she wrote a long letter, well, a relatively brief letter, actually, with a number of questions for City Attorney Barisoni, which he returned. And I'm now going to try to get her on the line and see if we can get some discussion with her on that subject. She's got a really busy Sunday, so we won't have a lot of time with her. But I'm actually hearing her ringing now. It's Sarah down here. Ringing Kate now, and hopefully she'll be picking up the phone shortly. We may be reaching the answering machine, however. She's Sunday show is not necessarily the best time. But we'll see what we got here. What I'm going to do while this phone rings, and I'll try this call again, make sure I didn't, by mistake, dial the wrong number, is I'm going to read you John Barisoni's response to Kate Wells' letter. And Kate Wells' letter, I'm going to go online here to see if I actually still have it. I kept a copy of it, I think, online, but I may have actually... unfortunately, it is... Well, here we go. Chavez versus Martinez. Let's see here. I can read her letter first, as I read her letter before. And I've also... we've talked about the Martinez case. I don't see the original letter from her. I see actually her latest response to this. So I'm going to... she asked a series of questions to John Barisoni about, under the Public Records Act request, asking, did the city council authorize this whole situation? Was the public informed? Was there a city council vote? That sort of thing. She got a letter back from John Barisoni that read, dated June 5th, the following. Dear Ms. Wells, this will respond to your June 2nd, 2003 letter relative to the captioned lawsuit. The City of Santa Cruz, at the request of the League of California Cities, agreed to participate in the litigation at the appellate level in an amicus curiae role as a friend of the court. It is a specific legal issue of concern to the city with which the amicus brief concerned itself is whether or not an alleged criminal offender statement taking violation of the Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination should expose the police officer who allegedly took that statement to civil constitutional rights liability under Title Code 42 U.S.C. 1983. If adopted by the Supreme Court, this principle would have dramatically expanded the liability exposure to police officers in cities which employ those police officers. As a city attorney, I therefore naturally felt a responsibility to bring this pending litigation to my client's attention, which I did. In response to your specific questions, the city's participation entailed no monetary cost. Accordingly, no taxpayer dollars were used to support this amicus effort. My interruption he's paid out of public funds. So if he spent any of his time, yes, it did have a cost. In this instance, because the city council was in recess for the entire month of August 2002, and because, according to the amicus attorney's August 9, 2002 letter, a decision could not be deferred until the first city council meeting in September, the city attorney, police chief, and city manager, employing their discretion, made the decision to join. All the documents you requested in your letter are attached. Thank you for your attention to the foregoing. Signed, City Attorney John Verasoni. So that is... Let's see if we... The letter that Kate Wells got back. And, of course, her response to this, she wrote back to John Verasoni on June 12th. And that response I'm now going to read. Dear John, thank you for the response to my letter of inquiry regarding the referenced case. And ringing also, trying to ring Kate Wells here and Kate at the same time. There are many things that trouble me about this matter.
Hello?
Hello, Kate Wells.
I'm talking long distance to my brother.
Oh, I'll try and get back to you, Kate.
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Yeah, this is kind of a family time for Kate. Of course, also Daddy's Day, Father's Day, one of those days that the Hallmark greeting cards like so much. I usually wish all the mothers I know a happy Father's Day, particularly the single mothers, since they do the job of both mother and father. Again, reading Kate Wells' letter to John Verasoni. Thank you for the response to my letter of inquiry regarding the reference case. There are many things that trouble me about this matter. First, obviously, Capitola and Santa Cruz were in the extremely small minority of the cities that chose to join in this amicus brief. Watsonville declined, as did Scotts Valley. Can you explain this? Kate explains that out of more than 750 cities in the state of California, only 50 joined this brief. And John Verasoni, city attorney for two of them, was the person who made that decision, apparently, along after advice from and counsel from the police chiefs of Capitola and Santa Cruz, as well as the city managers of both those. So you can thank Dick Wilson and Steve Belcher, as well as the Capitola highly paid head staff. Second, the only facts regarding the Chavez case presented in the material you sent me are set forth as if they were undisputed. Page 3 of the letter. This is obviously not the case. Did you do any independent research into the facts of the case before recommending that the cities join? Do you automatically recommend joinder if the LCC, that's the California League of Cities, requests it? Have you ever refused to recommend joinder? Third, do you believe that a police officer has the legal right to use whatever means of torture during interrogation so long as the words are not used against an interrogee in a later court proceeding? If not, where do you believe the court should draw the line? I suppose a better question would be, do you believe that the citizens of Santa Cruz and Capitola support the proposition that it is legally and morally acceptable for an officer to continue to interrogate an individual who is in excruciating pain from life-threatening injuries, blind and paralyzed, and who repeatedly begs the officer to stop and let him receive medical treatment, especially when it is clear from the nature of the questions that the purpose of the interrogation is to elicit information that would exonerate the officer who shot him? After listening to the tape, the conclusion is inescapable that Martinez believes that his receipt of medical assistance is dependent upon his answering Officer Chavez's questions. I can understand that Chief Belcher would like this to be okay. I do not believe that the majority of our citizenry agrees with him. What Sergeant Chavez did to Martinez was outrageous conduct that is shocking to the conscience, and I do believe that the majority of our citizens would agree with me. Please respond to my questions at your earliest convenience. Kate Wells. And indeed, the response of the city attorney was the letter I just... actually, that was... He hasn't responded to that second letter. I'm looking through some of the documents that he did give to Kate Wells, which she was kind enough to forward to me, which includes some of the background of the request that the city join in this case. And here's the allegation to give the other side, since we want to be fair in this matter. During a scuffle, plaintiff Oliverio Martinez grabbed the investigating officer's gun. No doubt this is according to the police. A backup officer shot Martinez several times, actually five times, When Martinez received emergency treatment, Defendant Sergeant Chavez interrogated him. Chavez failed to read Martinez's Miranda rights. He continued the interview for over 45 minutes, even though Martinez told him he did not want to talk and complained of extreme pain. This, I remind you, is the police and a police attorney description of what happened. So this is their side of the story, and it still sounds pretty horrible. In a Section 1983 damages case, the district court found that Chavez's emergency room interrogation violated Martinez's Fifth and Fourteenth Amendment rights. The Ninth Circuit affirmed. On June 3, 2002, the United States Supreme Court granted review. The Ninth Circuit's Martinez opinion expands cities' liability in two important respects. One, the U.S. Supreme Court has explicitly stated that a Fifth Amendment violation can only occur at trial. Nevertheless, Martinez holds that the very act of coercion triggers liability, even if the statement is never used against the defendant. So apparently John Barisani is telling us that coercion should not be a basis for liability. And number two, since the Fifth Amendment is only a trial right, the remedy for its violation is the exclusion of illegally obtained statements from court, not payment of monetary damages. Chavez, however, establishes a novel civil remedy for violation of either the Fifth or Fourteenth Amendments. Under Chavez, an interrogation subject need not suffer palpable legal, physical, or mental harm to successfully sue a city under Section 1983. Even a mere technical violation of Miranda may now result in a substantial damage award. But I don't think that this legal brief says that there should be liability for the cities or for the police if there is damage. In other words, there are some... appropriately, well, they can't use it in court, and that's that. But if, in fact, there is also a violation, I think we may have a phone call coming in here. I'm not sure.
Hello?
Hang on. We got a phone call coming in. Just a moment. Caught me a little behind the curve here. Yes, caller. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Dangerous Jim Vivian, suspended KKUP programmer.
Oh, yes. Jim, let me quickly finish up what I'm doing, and then we'll get on to you.
Okay.
Being tough. What I'm saying here now is that in this case, we could have had our city attorney arguing, well, a city shouldn't be liable for simply police officers engaging in inappropriate questioning, but maybe if they shoot the guy five times and then torture him all the way to the hospital, that might be a basis for civil liability. But no, that's not what city attorney John Barisani has said. He supported the position that in that particular case there should be no liability at all. And in so doing, he vastly expanded the torture powers of police departments across this country, indeed using taxpayer money. I'm sorry, his statement that taxpayer money is not expended when he spends his time is simply false. John, you're telling a tall tale. And I've got more to talk about on this issue. Hopefully I'll be able to get City Attorney Barisani. He also gets, not City Attorney Barisani, Attorney Kate Wells, who raised this issue, on the line to talk about it. John Barisani then sends a note to Police Chief Steve Belcher asking if he wants to join in the case. And Steve Belcher gives his little handwritten note, John, we should definitely join in. And that's the story. And he sends an identical letter as the city attorney for Capitola, no doubt getting a separate amount of money for the same thing. Talk about your double dipping. I don't know. I guess everybody has got to have, you know, a second job these days, but I think when you're getting there with more than $150,000 a year in your first job, or is it $600,000 a year if you look at your whole law firm, you don't need to have a second pot of honey to dip into. Jim, Vivian, thank you for waiting. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Jim, you were a KKUP broadcaster. You've often, in your late-night show, broadcast information about homeless civil rights and more broad civil rights struggles in the Santa Clara County, San Jose area. Now, what's happening?
Well, what's happening right now is that the KKUP Board of Directors is just out of control, acting illegally. There's a bunch of people who have been on that board for many, many years, and they're, it's just an incestuous groupthink situation where, you know, they're control freaks. That, you know, they just use a real obstructionist management style, and all kinds of things at the station aren't being taken care of, and they're trying to make sure nobody gets involved, and they just keep getting deeper and deeper into the whole getting behind in very important things regarding, you know, us keeping our license, keeping us on the air. And what I've been doing for the last few years is I'm on the program committee there, and I'm probably one of the most, if not the most influential member on the program committee, and the board of directors really doesn't like that because there's sort of two centers of power, you might say, at the station, and those are the two. So,
well, Jim, let me interrupt you. I know there were some problems at the various Pacifica stations where broadcasters Amy Goodman and Daniel Bernstein and others were thrown off the air for opposing what seemed to be a corporate grab for the Pacifica stations. On the other hand, this was with there, I think there was sort of a new management, although over the years Pacifica had gotten increasingly vanilla, less connected with the community, more NPR-ish, less concerned with community events and community concerns. I got this press release from you, which states, total censorship, KKUP radio host and department head banned from studio, suspended with recommendation for termination without specific charges, no right to a hearing, given gag order stating you can't communicate with anyone regarding KKUP business. Sounds like you're violating that one. All in an attempt to limit his ability to expose the truth about KKUP management and board of directors. Longtime KKUP radio program committee rep and radio host, reporter, producer, programmer Jim Vivian has been suspended for 60 days with a recommendation for expulsion from the general manager without any specific charges and with a gag order stating he is not to participate in any communication regarding KKUP business. According to a written statement from the KKUP general manager, which Jim received via certified mail on June 6th, and then mentioned you're holding a press conference, claim you're being silenced, they're censoring your communications with listeners and subscribers who will vote in the upcoming board of directors election, which I guess has already been held.
Well, no, actually it hasn't. You see, what they're trying to do is to keep my... What I was saying I was doing for the last few years is I was running for the board of directors not with the intent of winning, but with the intent of sending a letter out to the subscribers to let them know what's going on and to hopefully get some of them involved. And now some of them actually have been getting involved. And there was one who seems to be really good who sent in his application to run for the board of directors this year. He sent it in on time and all that stuff by mail. And then they told him, well, we didn't pick up the mail until after the deadline, so therefore your letter is late, even though it's postmarked the week before the deadline. We didn't pick up our mail. And they're telling me
what was your letter about again?
Excuse me?
What was your letter about?
Well, my letter, my candidate letter, is about saying what kind of stuff the board of directors is up to and all that, so the listeners know.
But can you be specific? You've made some general charges. What particular problems do you have? What particular actions of your board of directors over at KKUP?
Well, probably the main thing, I mean, where it really escalated in the last year is, in the past what had happened is the board of directors would at least, follow the law as far as the elections go. They wouldn't acknowledge anything people told them. They'd just ignore everything. But then, you know, when the elections would come up, they would follow the law. Sometimes we had to tell them, first they'd try not to follow the law, and then you'd tell them, you know, that, look, it's the law, you got to do it, and then they'd concede, okay, it's the law, we got to do it right. But what happened last year is they just went nuts, and they basically tried to send out a letter that I had sent them for another purpose as my subscriber letter, and this letter specifically stated it was only meant for the people I sent it to. And you know, they just totally violated the law. I kept warning them. I sent them email after email saying, look, don't go there. You know, you're violating the law. You're jeopardizing KKUP, our nonprofit status.
Hello, Jim. Why did they, first of all, what was in the subscriber letter that might be of interest to any of us, and why do you think they sent it out?
Well, they wanted to send out a letter that was not the letter I was writing to the subscribers, so they would keep me from writing a letter, letting the subscribers know what was going on.
I'm sorry, I'm still missing the point. What substantively, what are you trying to tell the community that they're not able to hear? You're making rather vague. The charge you're making is that they sent the wrong letter to a broader group, or they sent it, I'm still not clear.
Yeah. What happens when I write a candidate letter for the subscribers, that's the letter that I'm sending out to the subscribers. supposedly asking them to vote for me, but really that's not what I'm asking them for. I'm just telling them in my particular letter the last few years, I'm not really trying to get a seat on the board. I'm just trying to tell them what's going on the board and in the community,
I got
the listeners.
Jan, what about that letter? What wrong procedures were followed in that letter, and what significance does that have?
Well, the bylaws at KKUPN, the California Code, say that I get to send out whatever I want to the subscribers. And what the board did is they tried to send out a letter that I just sent to the board for another purpose and make that my letter they were sending out to the subscribers, reason being they didn't want to send out the letter that I was going to be writing.
So they sent out another letter that was not the one that...
Well, they tried to, but I found out what they were doing, and I didn't manage to stop them from doing that. But then they did a lot of, you know, then they changed all the election rules in midstream and said the letter, I could write a letter then, but it had to be a lot shorter than what they had, you know, what the policy was and all that. And they, you know, I finally did it under protest just because I wanted to get it over with, and then they sent out a libelous letter about me, but also very insulting to the subscribers, along with the ballots and all that.
What did they say?
Get
specific. I mean, this too general.
Okay.
What are we talking about here?
Yeah. Okay. Well, some of the specific things it said were, what happened is, what got caught up in the political issues is that they eliminated the newsletter that we promised the subscribers when they subscribe. You know, that's part of their subscription. They're supposed to get a newsletter. So they would said, like, this stuff that was really insulting to the subscribers, saying, well, we eliminated the newsletter because it's troublesome and expensive to send it to you. I mean, send something like that to subscribers, saying it's too much trouble to serve them.
Okay, and what was libelous against you? What charges did they make?
Oh, a bunch of stuff. You know, the main thrust of the letter was trying to defame me. You know, they tried to say, don't contact, because I had in my letter that I finally did get to send out, you know, to contact me if they wanted more information about all this, things like that. And then they said in their letter stuff like, you know, don't contact this person because it will be abusive to you, stuff like that.
They said not to, I'm sorry, so the station sent out a letter to subscribers saying not to contact you because you were an abusive person?
Yeah.
They used that language?
Right, yeah, and they said if you get any abusive communications from me, to contact them and all this stuff, trying to discourage people from contacting me and finding out more about what was going on, because what they did is they limited the length of my letter to half what it was supposed to be,
and
according to their policy.
Did it stop people from contacting you? What kind of response did you get?
I got a few people to contact me, but for the most part, I think it did stop people from contacting me.
Did you, like, make phone calls to find out what people's reaction to the letter was?
With some people who I know, you know, I don't have access to the phone numbers of subscribers, and there's, you know, well over 1,000 of them. But some of the people I know, you know, did get a hold of me and said, you know, this is ridiculous that they're sending this stuff out, of course.
Hmm.
And some of the ones
so
I...
What are you asking people to do? It's still not terribly... I mean, it sounds, you know, like you have a number of grievances and you're being suspended without any specific charges or reason?
Right.
You have your letter of suspension there?
Yeah. So let me say one other thing before I say that. You know, and let me tell you, part of the whole thing with suspending me is that according to the policy this year, the letters are going to be sent out to the subscribers on June 30th. So the reason they're suspending me and making up all these fabricated charges against me is to make sure that I'm not with the station on June 30th, and they're going to use that as an excuse not to send my letter out. I'm almost certain of that. And
Well, and I would prepare your letter anyway, and maybe try to get some other sympathizers in the station to run as proxies, and therefore, you know, get your letter sent out on that basis.
Well, demanding people to do is request that I get a fair hearing where I can present my evidence, because I can and show that the thing that I got a warning on and then what I got suspended. Well, they're not even saying really what I got suspended on, but I can prove that it's all fabricated.
Well, is there anything you want Free Radio Santa Cruz listeners to do? Or?
Yeah, there's a few things they should do. I can only give out the contact information that's like listed publicly, like on our website. I can't really give out phone numbers, but there's a few people they should email, and one is kkup-board, B-O-A-R-D, at kkup.org. Another one is jmthomas@email.stsu.edu. He's the board chair, Jim Thomas.
KKUP dash board at what?
At KKUP.org.
Oh, KKUP.org. Is that right?
And another one is the general manager, P. Tolley. P-K-O-L-L-I-E, that is at earthlink.net. You know, in my demands are basically that I be immediately notified in writing what the specific charges are against me, and that the gag order be listed. Demands that I be given a fair and open hearing where I can present all the evidence. And, if they define the charges better, of course, that'll make that easier to do. If the charges are defined, there's no lot of evidence.
We're talking with Jim Vivian, who has been suspended as KKUP broadcaster. Jim, it's maybe if folks want to get a sense of what this is all about, and I suggest you write a kind of a clear chronology of it and the specifics of the defamatory letters sent out about you and the particular demands you have. I did get your facts. I'm still a little bit not entirely clear about it, but what's an email for you or people can get more information on this?
Right. Okay. My email is reality734@yahoo.com.
Reality734@yahoo.com.
And my phone number is 408-562-2556.
Okay, 408-562-2556. Jim, thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Let us know as it develops what's cooking, and talk to you more about this later.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
And if you want more information about this, call the Huff line. In fact, if you want more information about any of the stuff on the show, ranging from how to stop the elimination of parking places for homeless people up at the end of Pacific, which is now apparently going to happen in 3 days, unless you call the Public Works Department, you can call 423-HUFF and get more. Leave a message, and I'll get back to you. The message on the line right now is somewhat out of date. Not entirely, but somewhat, and I will, you know, give you more information. The number to call, again, if you want to stop the permit parking is 420-5185. It's not permit parking, I'm sorry. It's the no parking at night signs. Permit parking is another issue that we're going to turn to just about now after this next brief and musical break. We're going to be talking about, we're going to be hearing Matt Farrell, who's the permit parking Führer, so to speak, the permit parking boss, the guy who slipped this thing through city council, even as the Transportation Commission said, give us more time. Farrell didn't mention that. Said, oh, we're going to work it out with the Transportation Commission. Everything's going to be hunky-dory. But he did have a chat with me. I like Matt, personally. I think he's a nice guy. It's just too bad he's the head of the Public Works Department, as it means I have to be on his ass. Let's hear this, and then we'll hear Matt Farrell.
Faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. You can't ask the landlord to put in the washer. He'd rather you'd move than to put in the washer. The faucets are dripping, they sound in my ears. The tap in the bathroom's been running for years. The faucets are dripping with old New York City. The faucets are dripping and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. There's a wild streak of green in the sink in the kitchen. It comes from the rill trickling out of the plumbing. The streams from the mountains, the pools from the lea, all run from my faucet and down to the sea. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. ask the landlord to put in the washer. You can't ask the landlord to mend the old stairs. He takes in the rents and he lives in Miami, where faucets don't drip and there's sun everywhere. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. The faucets are dripping, the landlord's content. With every new tenant, he raises the rent. The buildings can crumble, the tenants can cry. There's a shortage of housing, you'll live there or die. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York. They're building some buildings and fine city centers. It's sure working hell with the low-income renters. They're jammed into rooms with the rat and the fly, where the faucets all drip and the floors never dry. The faucets are dripping in old New York City. The faucets are dripping and oh, what a pity. The reservoir's drying because it's supplying the faucets that drip in New York.
And that was Malvina Reynolds, The Faucets Are Dripping. And that was, what, more than 30 years ago the faucets were dripping, almost 40 years ago. Hi, looking for Kate Wells. Alrighty.
It's not good.
And looks
right,
like,
hello?
Looks like we may have Kate Wells live on the air.
My son just arrived. This is really a bad time for me.
Uh-oh. How about a two-minute statement, Kate?
Well,
okay, we can catch you another time if you want.
Yeah, if you could call me back in an hour, we used to be on.
No, we have to go off about 1:45. We can try. We're still on.
Try me at 1:30.
Try and reach you at 1:30.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye. And, yeah, it's a family reunion day, Sunday, and we'll try and catch Attorney Kate Wells again to talk about torture in Santa Cruz. You know, that sort of thing. Our city attorney support that? No way. Well, apparently that seems to be the sad truth. Now, what I'm going to play for you are two things. First, a brief, a bit from the oral communication session of the Parks and Rec meeting. That was a meeting a couple weeks ago where Robert Pohn, Parks and Rec Commission member, did bring up the issue of this planter and the fact that seating space is going to be destroyed there, and could they ask the city council to delay it? And they didn't. They deadlocked 3-3 on it, and I couldn't get any of the Parks and Rec Commission people to agree to call the city council members, even as individuals, although they may have done that privately afterward. And there was a lot of nastiness that went on, a lot of disillusioning behavior by commission members. We know the city council is, in a word, crap in terms of how they treat the public and how they fawn on the staff. But I hadn't thought that necessarily the commissions were the same. Jeff Dunn, who's a community television boss, is the chair of the Parks and Rec Commission. I was very sad to see how he was essentially not just surrendering to the staff, but fluffing the staff. I mean, doing what he could to, lick their respective private parts and defend them from all attackers. And you can hear this in his response to my oral communication, where I talk about Parks and Rec and camping. This is, again, thanks to Joe Williams, we were able to get this tape re-recorded up to snuff.
It's June 14th, 2000.
This is my introduction to the tape, but we're going to go directly into the Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec Commission meeting on
Because the batteries ran out too slow, we're going to attempt to transcribe it, Eddie.
Bear with us.
Probe communications. Commission members, my name is Robert Norris. I work for a group called HUP, Homeless United for Prevention and Improvement, and I'm going to be addressing an item that will hopefully be on your agenda later. It looks like it is around seating space downtown. But I'm interested in bringing up briefly for your consideration. It's an old issue, but it's an issue that grows increasingly pressing during the summer as more and more people face a bad economy, and we have a situation where the permanent parking situation may criminalize people in their vehicles, not simply those who dare to sleep in their vehicles, heavens forfend, because they have no other affordable housing. That is estimated to be 1,500 to 2,000 people in the city limits alone, but even those who leave their vehicles and simply go to some other area like a park to try to sleep or to hide in the bushes or to find a friend that they can sleep on the sofa of. I'm concerned about the role of Parks and Rec Rangers in this particularly difficult time when there are only space in the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program on the floor of churches for 29 people. That's 29 people tonight out of 1,500 to 2,000 people. I would ask this commission to consider at some point recognizing that both the housing crisis, the economic crisis, and the reality of the ongoing homeless crisis in Santa Cruz that requires police not to ticket individuals unless there is some real crime happening other than sleeping or essentially life-sustaining behavior. This would be in accord with federal decisions in Miami, which is settlement happened around the Pottinger case back in 1992 and again in 1998, and has been upheld in courts in Santa Barbara, as well as in Albany, California, and Portland, Oregon, and Austin, Texas. Thanks for your attention. I know this is an issue you don't hear much about. You may consider a little out of your jurisdiction, but remember, you are the public voice in terms of the Parks and Rec, and they supposedly are supposed to pay some attention to City Council and the Parks and Rec Department itself to what you propose to them. Thank you.
Mr. Norris, we are only supposed to attend the issues that are under our jurisdiction. And so my question to you is, you use police and park rangers interchangeably. Mm-hmm. We are down to one park ranger, is that correct? And I am curious if you have any information about that one park ranger making any arrests in this country.
I've heard of sweeps along the river and in the Poconos. The specifics as to whether it was done by police officers or park rangers is often vague. The answer to your question is, I don't have particulars, but I would ask you, who are in a better position to get these kind of stats, to ask your staff, in fact, how many citations have been issued by that park ranger in the last 3 months? I'd be curious to hear, and I think that would be useful information for this commission to have. Thank you. Thank you.
And, in fact, Chair Jeffrey Dunn never did make the request of his staff as to how many citations were issued by Parks and Rec Rangers. And what I heard in the weeks that followed were that there was more than one park ranger, as apparently Chair Jeffrey Dunn was claiming, are engaged in giving tickets. And I don't know what the truth of the matter is, but when I hear a homeless person describing a number of people in Parks and Rec Ranger gear coming up on her, him, and claiming that they are, in fact, being ticketed by those people, I don't dismiss that. I mean, certainly there could be some errors made, who knows, could be some exaggeration. But I do note that the chair of the Parks and Rec Commission thought so little of this issue that he had no interest in even asking for a staff report, or perhaps he simply forgot about it. I'm not sure what the story is. Activist Becky Johnson, who's been covering this issue for Street Spirit for a number of years, writing articles on Parks and Rec and the camping ban, the sleeping ban as well, the sitting ban portions of the camping ordinance, has some thoughts on the issue. She may be calling in to talk about the issue. In fact, I think I see that happening. Hello?
Hi, Robert. This is Becky Johnson.
Hey, Becky.
Yeah, we actually do have some stats, although they're not as recent as the last 3 months, about the percentage of tickets that are written under the camping ordinance for sleeping, covering up with blankets, or setting up a campsite with the intention of spending the night. And actually, Parks and Rec write more tickets than the Santa Cruz Police Department, and they're not governed by a policy of tickets on complaint only. They just go through and ticket. But another problem with Parks and Rec is they'll go through and they'll find campsites and they'll just destroy the material. If they don't want to cart it back, they just slash tents. We've heard reports of that over the years. You know, this is something that the Parks and Rec Commission should be aware of. The documentation came through the Homeless Issues Task Force back in, I believe it was in 2000, and it did show how many citations were issued in the city and how many were by Parks and Rec, and I think it was slightly over half, like around like 56 or 57% were tickets issued by park rangers.
What about Chair Dunn's claim that there's only one Park and Rec ranger and that accordingly he was worried? He was saying, well, this isn't our jurisdiction if the police are doing it, and how many are the Parks and Rec doing now?
Mm-hmm.
Is the number of one ranger active an accurate number as far
no,
as...
No, no, not at all. That couldn't possibly be. Look at the budgets we have. Let's see, the police department gets 33% of the budget, and the Parks and Rec is like 23%, and with proportional staff to that, you're not going to get one or two rangers that write tickets for citations for camping. It'd be a lot more than that.
It sounds like you're speculating. Do you have any hard stats on how many rangers there actually are? Because I know that when you and I spoke to some rangers 3 or 4 years ago at, what was it called, the cafe that was near the Homeless Services Center.
We Cafe got this. Benny?
What's that?
No, it's a
Yeah, Beans. This is down down on River Street.
Beans,
yeah, that was an old cafe they had there before they closed it down. The rangers told us that everybody, there was a big layoff going on at the current time, and that a lot of people were being cut back, and there were 5 rangers being cut back to 2 or 3. And I've never done a thorough investigation of the rangers, and it sounds like you may not have either. Do you have any clear stats on that?
The stat that I had was issued to the Homeless Issues Task Force. It was from Chief Belcher. It listed the citations for camping and broke them down as to what part were park rangers and what part were Santa Cruz Police Department. And they were predominantly, the majority of the citations were park and recs workers. Now, that was 3 years ago. But I wouldn't imagine that it's all that different today.
I think what we need to do, since Jeffrey Dunn doesn't seem interested, at least didn't express an interest in that meeting, is make a Public Records Act request of the Parks and Rec tickets issued in the last year by Parks and Rec for camping and sleeping, campsites destroyed, and so forth.
For A, B, or C, and break them down on that.
Yeah. Now, Becky, you were also...
Also, whether property was confiscated or not, that would also be a good question.
Yeah. In fact, if you want to do that, let us know what's happening. You were at the Parks and Rec meeting where this issue of the Pacific Trading Company, a seizure of the seating space, the elimination of bench space, although it's cement bench space, or the walnut planter,
was
done. And you had some sort of reactions to what happened. You videoed much of it, as I understand it, and... you then viewed the video. That was a while ago, so you probably...
If anyone wants to see that video, get a hold of me, and I'll get a copy to you. Robert Poen, one of the Parks and Rec commissioners, was very, I thought, bravely placed the item on the agenda and advocated strongly that the Parks and Recreation Commission has already ruled that there's not enough seating space on Pacific Avenue, and that they wanted the city to increase the number of seating space downtown. And then here's the city coming along and removing what we estimated up to 30 seating spaces in the downtown area, and without really any kind of public process around it either. What my remarks were geared to a question that came up before the item came up, where the staff, Danette Shoemaker, reported that the Parks and Rec budget had been scaled back in cost cutting efforts by juggling staff, defunding a position, and renaming people at lower wages, and but basically covering the same ground. And that would save the city about $12,000 per year in overall costs. Then the estimate we had heard from Assistant City Manager Martine Bernal is that the moving the railing on the Costa Brava planter would cost between $7,000 and $12,000 a year. So my comment was, gee, look at this. You know, you're saving $12,000 by cutting back on real wages to workers, city workers, and instead, and here you're spending maybe $12,000 on this frivolous and anti-homeless project downtown with moving the railing, which I saw today, and it really is aesthetically less pleasing than the previous railing. I don't think it would stand past Cynthia Mabb's standards.
It is butt ugly. I'm sorry.
It's kind of it's a welder's railing. It's not really it doesn't come up to the artsy fartsy level that we're used to on Pacific Avenue.
Getting back to the Parks and Rec Commission hearing, I know that I found it particularly interesting because of this December resolution passed by the Parks and Rec. At the initiative of Sherry Connable, there was, after much delay by the Parks and Rec staff, whether it was Danette Shoemaker or Steve Hammack, who seemed to be vying for top dog as to who's going to be the Führer of the organization. He's the superintendent. She's the temporary head of the department. They held off on the issue of where the hell have all the benches gone, because more than half of those originally slated for Pacific Avenue are not there anymore in the area between Cathcart and Mission Street along Pacific, where they were supposed to be. They've been removed, I would suggest, almost all of them by merchant pressure, because there's no documentation about why they were removed. There are no work orders. When I put in a Public Records Act request, I got some information amounting to about 10 pages of a few anecdotal, sparse statements at different times in the last decade, but no systematic record of who removed the benches and why and at what cost. Not a word about that and then where the benches went. It is true that Steve Hammack did do a big display later on, to his credit, a good display about the benches, which was never really posted in the public place for very long, although it was in his office for several weeks and people could come into the office and see it. But the Parks and Rec Commission then voted in December to damn well get those benches back and to expand the benches and to set up memorial benches and so forth. And that recommendation, instead of going to City Council and onto the City Council agenda automatically, as it's supposed to do under the Porter rules, or get sent back to the City Commission, the Parks and Rec Commission, with comments from the mayor, was deep-sixed and disappeared down the memory hole. And Steve Hammack was sitting, he's the guy who eventually told us that the paycheck was the amount of money going to this planter thing was $7,200. He sat in on the Downtown Interdepartmental Coordinating Committee.
Well, maybe he forgot to send the resolution to the City Council.
I guess so. Well, he sat in on the various staff meetings that discussed this, and he never once told the Parks and Rec Commission that he sits on as staff that they were planning to destroy 30 seating spaces without a City Council hearing, without a public process, at a cost of at least $7,200.
Hang
on a second, Becky. Hammack never said that, and he never told the commission that, and yet, and this is what I want to ask you about, when you made your comments about, you know, kind of sarcastically suggesting that the staff has saved money, has cut salaries now in order to give them essentially as a private benefit to the Pacific Trading Company, what did Chair Jeff Dunn do?
He accused me of making a personal attack against Danette Shoemaker, and that he said he didn't tolerate that in his meeting.
So in other words, the staff that has misled and misinformed his body in violation of the recommendations he has passed, his body has passed, is now getting the blank check cover-up defense from him. I mean, that may sound a little dramatic, but that, to me, is what it really looked like. They're not going to hold their staff accountable. even when their staff is fighting them on this issue, concealing the very abolition of the seating spaces that they are calling for the return of, even after they've passed those recommendations.
Well, I did use the word gloat, perhaps inappropriately, and saying that the Parks and Rec would gloat about their cost-cutting efforts, you know, and showing their great spirit of cooperation that Parks and Rec has with the city to help in this financial crisis.
You know, if he's not ignoring the situation for campers who are being hassled, having their campsites torn up by, according to him, one ranger, which I really doubt. Brian Koepke gave us evidence 2 months ago. He's a homeless activist with Food Not Bombs currently traveling around the country, that there are were massive attacks on by Parks and Rec, demolition of campsites without even 24-hour notice, an issue that Sherry Connable brought to Parks and Rec, I think in March or April. And this issue only comes back to Parks and Rec in June. I guess it got back there in May after the Downtown Commission was raised by the Downtown Commission. But the next thing we heard from these clowns who are staffing the Parks and Rec Commission are that it's not in their jurisdiction. It's in the Downtown Commission's jurisdiction, which is interesting because a month before, the Downtown Commission staff, Matt Farrell, had insisted, oh, no, this is not in their jurisdiction. It's in the Parks and Rec Commission's jurisdiction. So instead of taking a stand on the issue and saying, save the bench space downtown, as it already decided mm-hmm. they wanted to do, all they said was, well, we're not going to ask them to hold off because it's a done deal. Wasn't that what they said?
Well, yeah. Steve Hammack reported that the purchase order had already been cut. He had done it, actually, himself, he said, and that the new fence was being fabricated already off-site and that they were going to bring it and replace it.
So wait a minute. Hammack made the decision to cut the check to do this before the Parks and Rec Commission meeting, knowing it was on the Parks and Rec Commission agenda. Is that correct?
He didn't say when he had cut the check, only that it had already been done.
Well, I doubt it was done 2 months ago. It was probably done. He knew it was coming up because it was brought up by a member of the Parks and Rec Commission the month before and told, oh, you got to wait a month to put it on the agenda. So he knew it was coming on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And there he was, essentially subverting a public process in order to make sure that a private business gets its own bigoted agenda forwarded in spite of the consensus of the community as expressed through the Parks and Rec Commission.
Yeah, I really don't like boycotts and really get involved with them. I'm not against merchants. I think that they should be able to earn a reasonable living, and I do understand that is part of our tax base here in the city. But because of the behavior of the Pacific Trading Company and how they have gone so far to eclipse our rights here in Santa Cruz and to privatize the street and to participate in a particularly vicious behind-the-scenes process, I do urge people to boycott Pacific Trading Company.
You know, when Carolyn, who's the owner who we heard speaking earlier on tape, came out and called me a hateful person and a liar and then couldn't quite remember any lies that I'd said recently.
Right.
She was pointed out to me as the person who cried at the city council mic on the issue of the downtown ordinance. She wept there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I've gotten a little unsympathetic based on the kinds of machinations that are going on behind the scenes. But, you know, frankly, she doesn't seem to me like a bad human being or a bad person, and her claim that her motivation is not to eliminate homeless people is probably true. She feels, probably, that there are plenty of places where people can sit, just not in my backyard, just not in front of my store, you know? And I think that this plan probably wasn't formulated by her. It's probably a brainchild of people like Martine Bernal, Seal Cirillo, Julie Hindy, city staffers on the redevelopment agency, mm-hmm. in the city manager's office, maybe in the public works department, who have this routine fence them out, drive them away, make them criminals response.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I think that's exactly what's going on. This sounds like a Julie Hendy special to me. I'm wondering why we even have a redevelopment agency. It was set up after the 1989 earthquake to rebuild the downtown, and it's a pretty expensive agency for us to operate. They are eligible for certain redevelopment funds, and so I think we could leave a ghost of a redevelopment agency so we could still secure those kinds of regular annual funding. But do we need all these extremely high-paid staffers running around figuring out how to privatize every little public spot and make sure that there's no place in town left for a person to gather or to rest or to be unhassled or exist without having to make some sort of cash payment every few hours or so? We don't need these people. We could... They're not even taking care of the roads. I mean, look at how crumbly the streets are. I mean, that's just one of the basic functions of a city, is to have roads and sewers and water and make, you know, traffic control, those kinds of things. And I just think that the staff here at the city of Santa Cruz are so caught up in their ever-growing budgets, which they justify by increasingly kind of like totalitarian grabs. This citywide permit parking is a perfect example of, look, here are all these parking spaces where people can park their cars and they don't have to pay any money, just as long as they move their car every 72 hours. Let's permit park it, set up a whole bureaucracy that's going to cost, that they can hire more staff and have more office space and more telephones and computers and enforcement officers and collect money from everybody in the city, every resident in the city. Oh, and by the way, it just by coincidence seems to work out that homeless people who are parking their cars won't have an address on that street, so they won't be able to even apply for that permit, even if they've got the money for it.
And in the non-residential areas, we'll put up special signs that say no parking from 1 a.m. to 7 a.m.
Yeah.